Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, continuing our conversation with 99-year-old Jim Parker of North Las Vegas, Nevada, originally from McAllen, Texas. He's been telling us about a mission that earned him the Distinguished Flying Cross nearly 78 years ago, flying with the 301st Bomb Group's 32nd Squadron. His formation was jumped by German fighter planes, and while his gunners shot down quite a few of them, the damage inflicted by enemy fire was extensive. Before long, the bomber was without rudder or aileron or elevator control. He'd lost radio contact. In fact, the entire electrical system was out. His only way of directing the plane back to his base in Italy was through throttle adjustments on the B-17's four engines, which somehow had continued to function properly with fuel lines intact.
I mean, it took you 4 hours because you're flying at just above stall speed. How vulnerable was your plane for those 4 hours?
If an engine had gone out, we'd probably spun in. The gunners would have probably gotten out, but the navigating bombardier down the nose and in flight out of the nose was next to impossible because you're in front of all four engines.
And what about enemy fighters fire?
The fighters would only follow you, I'll say, 100 miles, and as far as they would go. They thought they had me shot down. In fact, German National Radio reported me by name shot down.
Wow.
I get home, my group had me already reported as shot down. They were getting ready to call my wife when I got a hold of the 15th Air Force ops officer and don't let any false messages get out to my wife.
I'm just going to keep asking a lot of questions because this is so crazy, the story you're telling me here. So you're limping along. A number of things could have taken you out. As you said, you lose an engine, you're going to spin in, you're not going to have time to get the whole crew out. You even said there was no chance of you ever bailing out because by the time everybody else would have, you wouldn't be able to.
Right.
If the rest of your crew had bailed out at some point, would they have become prisoners of war, do you think?
Well, they said they bailed out in the first 30 minutes.
After that, you were back across the lines.
We were close enough to the conflict line. Italians were super American supporters. If you'd bailed out and you were still 300 miles short of the front lines, there would be Italian families that some way would camouflage you and get you down till you got back in American territory. You could say, well, they're stupid. In the second verse, you could say they're angels of God. They were just lovable people.
And where was your base?
At that time, Cerignola, Italy. That's on the eastern part above Bari. Between Bari and Foggia.
So you're trying to get all the way back to your base.
Yes.
And as this time is slowly ticking by, are you looking for alternate landing spots where you might be able to belly in?
Nope.
You're just thinking we're going to make it all the way.
I never had a single doubt in my mind from the time that we lost the controls that God was going to help me get the airplane home. It just, like I said, there wasn't any talking going on, so there wasn't any questions and answers. But all kinds of questions a couple, 3 hours after we got on the ground.
How did you maintain your course to make it back to base?
Power.
Just by the engines?
Yeah, just the engines. If I wanted to turn a little left, I'd pull the number one engine back till I got where I was, and I'd bring it back and say it's cruise. By the time I got on the ground, I was a perfectionist as power on that B-17.
Had you ever had to do that before?
No.
Had you ever even thought of that, that was a possibility?
I thought of a lot of things. I never thought of exactly what happened. I never worried about would I be able to handle it. I worried about how I was going to handle it. The prime factor of crew success is a poker face pilot. It shows no emotion one way or the other. That feeds off to the next guy, to the next guy, to the next guy. I bet you I was asked by crew members in the next 30 minutes, how did you do it? What were you thinking? I went by their names, navigator, bombardier, co-pilot, top gunner, radio gunner, waist gunner, voluntary. I said, I sense God just let us all set foot on the ground. And I was proud of my accomplishment, but I didn't really feel I'd done anything special. The title pilot implies an awful lot of things.
So because of the situation that your aircraft was in, the only way that you could make that plane go up or down or left or right was by changing the throttle on those four engines.
That's right.
So you're basically pulling levers for 4 hours trying to keep it straight and level and on course.
It's the easiest thing to do. I don't know where I have a picture of a throttle quadrant or not. They had the most unique throttle quadrant of any multi-engine airplane I ever flew. There were two bars come up out of the quadrant, and you come up about 6 inches, and you had a short bar at the bottom, a couple inches, 2.5 inches above, another crossbar, and then 2.5 above another crossbar. The top one would only deal with 1 and 4 engine. The middle one had all four. The bottom one, inside engines, 2 and 3 engines. So you had unbelievable combinations you could work with power comfortably with a B-17. See, I flew a 36, which had 10 engines on it.
Yeah.
Of course, I only used 6. The co-pilot had the throttles for the 4 jets on the airplane.
That's a massive aircraft. I'm just fascinated by how you got this plane on the ground safely and saved everybody's life. You'd never done that before. Had you heard of any other pilots doing that?
Oh, I watched belly landing after belly landing.
But, I mean, in that condition where their only steering is the throttle.
Well, no, but that was just...
Isn't that a pretty big deal?
It's a big deal if you don't get excited.
Well, I guess.
All these things are new, naturally in airplanes. If you're just starting out, it's all new.
Yeah.
Everything that happens, you find a leveling bar in yourself. This keeps you level so that you're thinking clearly and smartly and accurately. I depend an awful lot on God, but he was there too.
So you get the plane on the ground finally. You belly land it. Nobody's injured other than your ball turret gunner who was shot up.
About a half mile on final, we shot a red flare, which let them know we had a wounded person aboard. So the ambulance crew knew that and just as soon as the airplane stopped, there they were out of the ambulance, and my radio man handed them ball turret gunner.
Well, and the other thing, I'm trying to put myself in this and what you must have been dealing with, even on final, you're not sure how this is going to go, how hard you're going to come down.
Well, you've never done it before, so you learn it the first time right or you're hurt.
And even if your co-pilot hadn't been able to kill all four engines at once, that could have made things go haywire.
Well, if he'd got two and the other side.
So a lot of things could have gone wrong there.
Well, we discussed that at length for at least 30 seconds. Be sure, if you can't get them all four at once, don't touch any.
So what was the feeling that you experienced as soon as that plane was safely on the ground after 4 hours of what sounds like torture and chaos for a lot of people?
I wanted to see 9 warm bodies, and I never saw the crew get out of an airplane so fast in my life. Improbable manners. I went out, had a sliding side window. You couldn't get through it with a parachute on. About a half mile on final, I unbuckled my chute and got out of it. I noticed my co-pilot did after I did. So he was following the leader, so to speak. But that way, we were able to jump and get out through the side windows. I was on the ground before the dust settled. I went out the pilot's window, the ground, and there's all the crew. The old tail gunner, he couldn't come forward. And of course, it's opening there, so when we belly landed, scooping up dirt, dumping on him, it looked like a dirt man.
He was covered in it because it came up through the hole in the belly.
Solid dirt, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a tall guy. He was about 6'3", a Louisiana kid. I said, why don't you get out and push for me back there when we got slow? He said, I thought about it, but I couldn't get my feet against anything to push.
And then, but the first thing that happens to you is a guy comes to chew you out for not landing on the airstrip?
The group commander.
Yeah. And you instinctively pull your gun out before your buddy helps you out and saves you from doing something silly. Yeah. I mean, this is like the story
from
the
movie. That was an automatic reaction, just like everything I did in the airplane coming on.
And then after that, I'm sure you had a lot of explaining to do. Everybody wanted to know what happened, right?
No, my wing ops officer and I were good personal friends. You know, they debriefed every crew individually. But he wasn't satisfied with debriefings till he got mine. So he always debriefed me off every flight I took. And so we had a lot of personal conversations going back and forth there. And why did you think this? Why did you do that? I said, pointed each member of my crew. I said, there they all are, alive and walking. Nobody's limping. Nobody's crippled. Of course, the ball turret was in an ambulance going to the hospital. I said, here's your damned airplane. You can start stealing parts off of it now for keep the other dogs running. I don't want to see it again in my life. There's a no man's land out there somewhere, and I was in that after I got out of the airplane. And this ops officer, knowing me as well as he did, he walked me off about 100 feet. And he said, you comfortable standing? I said, yeah, very comfortable. And so I stood there with my arms folded, and he wouldn't let anybody come around and bother me or question me or anything. I finally gave him the high sign and walked over to where they were. And that was it.
And it's been 77, almost 78 years since that happened.
And I can remember every detail, everything that I did the whole way home.
And you've made that clear. But I'm curious if even after all that time, is it still hard to believe that that actually happened the way it happened?
Oh, yes.
Because you live in Las Vegas, the city of odds. People are putting odds on everything. What are the odds that given what you were facing, that eventual outcome would have happened?
Well, it's less than 1% probably.
Yeah.
But that's where true belief comes in.
You really didn't question whether or not it would end that way?
Nope. I never had the thought of crash landing out in the middle of nowhere. In fact, this ops officer, he knew me well enough, he says, when did you decide how you were going to do your landing? I said, about 20 minutes after I lost control of the airplane. I said, you got to plan ahead.
I guess so.
I said, I'll tell you what, next mission I get on, put you in the right seat and teach you what a combat sword is like. He made sure he didn't see me till after I finished up.
There's so many other things that come to mind here. Well, for one, I've talked to a lot of pilots and air crews who say one of the first things that happened after a mission like that, maybe not exactly like that because I haven't heard one exactly like that, but they would be offered a shot of whiskey.
Well, we were in the 15th Air Force. Everybody on the crew got a shot of whiskey. So I was the most popular guy in the wing because or group because I didn't drink. Everybody wanted my shot of whiskey.
In fact, I heard you've never had a sip of alcohol in your life.
Never tasted it. I made an observation, I guess, 5 or 6 years old. That's when I first started dreaming flying airplanes. That old country farm boy needs all of his brain if he's going to fly an airplane. So don't muddle it up with alcohol. I've known some brilliant men, and I think about how much more brilliant they would have been if they'd left alcohol off the menu.
And another thing that came to mind about that DFC mission, did your crew have reunions after the war? Did you ever get together with those guys?
Never did. I stayed in contact by telephone. My radio man lives in some town there on the coast in Virginia. He was a perfect crew member. Like that ball turret got injured, and he was right back there, got him out of the turret and in the radio room. Otherwise, he'd hung her in that turret and died.
The reason I asked about, you know, reunions or staying in touch is I just have to imagine that those guys were pretty amazed that you were able to bring that plane in the way you did. Did they ever say anything to you about that?
Oh, this, I'll pat me on the back.
Yeah.
I said, that's history. We got another flight. Let's worry about it.
And we should probably hear about some of those other flights before we bring this conversation in for a landing with 99-year-old Jim Parker. When we come back, more of his close calls in World War II, plus the clever line Jim dropped on Frank Sinatra, one of the many famous names he transported during his decades as a corporate pilot. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.